In a literary landscape dominated by formulaic romances, Morgan Bridges' Once You're Mine stands as a provocative outlier that has developed a cult following among readers seeking darker, more complex relationship dynamics. This first installment in the Possessing Her duet has been praised by celebrities like Megan Fox, who called it deliciously twisted, and has sparked heated discussions across book talk about the boundaries between protection and possession. What makes this dark romance so compelling is its unapologetic exploration of obsession through characters who are neither heroes nor villains, but exist in the morally ambiguous shadows between. Hayden Bennett is a man accustomed to delivering his own brand of justice. As a prosecutor by day and vigilante by night, he's killed before and feels no remorse when his victims deserve it. His latest target was Senator Eric Green, a powerful man whose death should have been just another notch in Hayden's belt of righteousness. But something unexpected happens at the senator's funeral. Hayden becomes fixated on Callista Green, the senator's daughter. Unlike the performative mourners surrounding her, Callista offers comfort to the staff rather than receiving it. She maintains perfect composure until everyone leaves, only then allowing herself a moment of genuine grief. This authenticity captivates Hayden, who finds himself drawn to her vulnerability in a way that disturbs him. "She threatens what remains of my sanity," he admits to himself, taking the lily she placed on her father's casket and pressing it to his lips where hers had been. What begins as curiosity quickly spirals into obsession. Hayden arranges for Callista to work at the Sugar Cube coffee shop near his office building, allowing him to monitor her daily movements. He installs cameras in her apartment, follows her home at night, and even breaks in while she sleeps to steal her pearl necklace, leaving individual pearls on her nightstand as a twisted signature of his presence. The predator becomes prey to his own obsession as he struggles to understand why Callista affects him so deeply. "I've spent weeks trying to understand why you're different than the rest and why you matter when I don't give a fuck about anyone else." His need to possess her completely becomes all-consuming, leading him to declare with chilling certainty, "I can't let you go now that you're here. If I did, it'd be like removing my lungs. I wouldn't fucking survive it." Callista Green's life has collapsed around her. Once the privileged daughter of a powerful senator, she now works at a coffee shop, lives in a dangerous neighborhood, and struggles to pay her bills. Her father's murder has left her alone and desperate for answers, spending what little money she has on a private investigator who ultimately fails her. Despite these hardships, Callista demonstrates remarkable resilience. She continues working, maintains her composure in public, and refuses to accept charity, even throwing back the excessive tip her ex-fiancé tries to leave her. Her quiet strength manifests in small acts of kindness toward others, like comforting her father's staff at his funeral rather than seeking comfort herself. Beneath her composed exterior lies deep trauma. We learn that on June 24th, the night of her father's secretary's murder, Callista was drugged and assaulted at the Hopeful Hearts Children's Shelter where she volunteered. This attack left physical and emotional scars, including bruises on her throat captured in a photograph that later becomes crucial evidence. Her relationship with her father was complex. Though she fiercely defends his innocence regarding his secretary's murder, there are hints that their relationship wasn't perfect. When Hayden questions her about the bruises on her neck, she experiences a panic attack, suggesting deeper trauma possibly connected to her father. Callista's journey is one of reclaiming agency in a world where control has been repeatedly taken from her. Her determination to find her father's killer, her resistance to Hayden's possessiveness, even as she's drawn to him, and her refusal to be a victim all showcase her inner strength. As she tells Harper about her stalker situation, she's not resigned to victimhood, but actively seeking solutions. "I'm not going to just sit around and wait to be murdered." The relationship between Hayden and Callista evolves through a complex dance of attraction and resistance. Their first meaningful encounter occurs at the Sugar Cube when Hayden, whom Callista recognizes as the prosecutor from her father's trial, defends her against an aggressive customer. This chivalrous act confuses Callista, who can't reconcile it with the man who tried to imprison her father. Their interactions are charged with tension from the start. When Hayden offers to take over her father's murder investigation for free, Callista refuses, trusting her intuition that warns her against him. Yet she can't deny her physical response to him. Despite my hatred for him destroying my father's reputation, I'd been drawn to him from our first encounter in the hallway, not just to his beauty, but to how he looked at me as if I were a woman and not the porcelain doll I'd been treated like my entire life. As financial desperation drives Callista to seek employment at a seedy bar, Hayden's possessiveness erupts violently. When a customer touches her hair, Hayden appears like a wraith, nearly severing the man's thumb while declaring to everyone present that Callista belongs to him. This display both terrifies and thrills her, awakening desires she's ashamed to acknowledge. Their relationship intensifies after Callista kisses Hayden at a nightclub to prevent him from attacking another man. What begins as a distraction becomes a surrender to long-denied passion. When she later tries to run from him, he chases her down an alleyway, cornering her with the declaration that has become his mantra, "You belong to me." Despite her protests, she surrenders to his touch, climaxing under his skilled hands as he vows, "I'm keeping you now that I've caught you." The push-pull dynamic continues as Callista struggles with her growing feelings for a man who represents everything she should avoid. When she finally agrees to stay with him for protection against her stalker, she sets boundaries. "I intend to resist you." His response, "And I intend to convince you," perfectly captures their relationship's central tension. Both Hayden and Callista carry deep, complex wounds from their pasts that create unexpected and powerful connections between them. Their trauma bonds manifest in moments of crisis, revealing how their damaged pieces fit together in ways neither anticipated. When Callista experiences a severe panic attack during their heated confrontation about her hospital visit, Hayden's response is both instinctive and telling, gathering her trembling form in his arms, guiding her erratic breathing with practiced ease, and offering reassurances that cut through her terror with surprising precision. This pivotal moment triggers a cascade of haunting memories for Hayden, particularly of his mother, who battled the devastating trifecta of addiction, clinical depression, and debilitating panic attacks. He vividly recalls the countless nights spent holding her during her worst episodes, using the same soothing words he now offers Callista. The parallel between these two women in his life reveals layers of Hayden's character. Beneath his violent exterior lies a deep well of tenderness born from years of being his mother's protector. His obsession with Callista appears rooted not just in attraction, but in a desperate need to succeed where he failed with his mother, creating a complex web of protection, possession, and redemption. The turning point comes when Callista, still shaken but slowly steadying, reaches out to touch his face. Her exploration of his features with gentle fingertips becomes a profound moment of connection. For Hayden, her touch transcends physical sensation, burning deeper and hotter than a supernova, and effectively shattering the protective walls built around his childhood trauma. When she attempts to withdraw her hand, his response is raw and immediate, catching her wrist and pressing her palm back against his cheek, desperate for the healing her touch provides and terrified of losing this unexpected balm to his wounded soul. Their dynamic takes on new complexity when Hayden learns of Callista's drugging and assault. His reaction manifests in explosive violence, destroying his office in a rage that speaks to both his protective instincts and his own unresolved trauma. Yet the aftermath reveals their deepening bond as Callista tends to his bloodied knuckles with careful attention. Her gentle ministrations act as an immediate salve, calming the violence within me and highlighting the paradox of their relationship. These intimate moments of care punctuate their otherwise turbulent dynamic, showing how they simultaneously heal and wound each other. Their trauma bond becomes both a source of comfort and conflict, a delicate balance of hurt and healing that defines their evolving relationship. Through these interactions, the story explores how past trauma shapes present connections and how the right touch can both trigger and heal deep-seated wounds. Their relationship becomes a complex dance of vulnerability and protection, where moments of tenderness carry as much weight as their conflicts. A central theme throughout the novel is the tension between protection and control. When Callista reveals she has a stalker, Hayden offers her safety in exchange for her freedom. His conditions are clear. She must move in with him, notify him of any threats, and after he solves her father's murder, give herself to him completely without restriction. This bargain represents the double-edged sword of Hayden's protection. He provides security that Callista desperately needs, a luxury apartment far from her dangerous neighborhood, financial stability, and physical safety from her stalker. Yet this protection comes with golden handcuffs. He tracks her phone, demands she answer his calls and texts immediately, and becomes enraged when she disobeys his instruction to stay home. Callista recognizes the problematic nature of their arrangement. I may be falling into old habits of letting someone take care of me, but I remind myself it's likely temporary. Her friend Harper frames the dilemma perfectly when she suggests that with a stalker, the devil you know might be safer than the alternative. The irony, of course, is that Hayden himself is the stalker, a revelation that devastates Callista when she discovers pearls from her necklace in his jacket pocket. This twist transforms their relationship from problematic to predatory, forcing Callista to confront the true cost of the protection she's accepted. Yet even after learning the truth, Callista remains torn between fear and attraction. When Hayden admits his obsession has only grown stronger since they've been intimate, declaring he'll lie, cheat, steal, and kill to keep her, she finds herself torn between fear and attraction. This complex response highlights the novel's nuanced exploration of toxic relationships and the blurred lines between protection and possession. While the romance dominates the narrative, the murder mystery surrounding Senator Green and his secretary provides crucial context and motivation that ripples throughout the story. Initially, Hayden believes he delivered justice by killing the senator, whom he considered guilty of murdering his secretary, Kristen Hall. His conviction stemmed from circumstantial evidence and witness statements suggesting the senator had been sexually harassing Hall in the weeks leading up to her death. However, as he investigates Callista's past, he discovers evidence that challenges his long-held certainty about the case. A pivotal piece of evidence emerges, a photograph showing distinct bruise patterns on Callista's throat from the night of Hall's murder. These marks, documented in an emergency room report, raise disturbing questions about what really happened that night. The investigation takes a darker turn when Hayden learns that Callista was admitted to Elite Healthcare Clinic that same evening with GHB, the date rape drug, in her system. Medical records reveal she had been found unconscious in the parking lot of her father's campaign office just blocks from where Hall's body was discovered. Further investigation reveals a chilling connection that sends shockwaves through Hayden's carefully constructed worldview. The specific chemical composition of the GHB in Callista's system matches compounds found in both the fatal pills that killed Hayden's mother and the toxicology report from Hall's bloodstream. This forensic link suggests the same person might be behind all three incidents, a revelation that forces Hayden to question everything he thought he knew about the cases. This connection creates a terrifying pattern that haunts Hayden. Two women are dead, and Callista could be next. His growing horror at the possibility that he killed an innocent man in Senator Green adds layers of complexity to his relationship with Callista, who has steadfastly maintained her father's innocence. Their dynamic becomes increasingly strained as evidence mounts suggesting she might have been right all along and that the real killer remains at large. The investigation peels back layers of Hayden's own moral complexity. Though he operates as a vigilante who kills those he deems deserving of death, he's genuinely disturbed by the possibility that he murdered an innocent man. This internal struggle reveals a strict code of ethics within his vigilanteism that, while twisted, provides a moral framework for his actions. His dedication to finding the truth, even when it might implicate him in a wrongful death, shows a commitment to justice that transcends his personal agenda. As the first book draws to a close, the murder mystery remains tantalizingly unresolved. Hayden races against time to protect Callista from whoever drugged her, someone who appears to have orchestrated a complex scheme spanning years and claiming multiple victims. The stakes escalate as evidence suggests the killer has intimate knowledge of both families' histories and may be plotting their next move. This unresolved thread creates mounting tension that carries into the sequel, Now You're Mine, leaving readers with pressing questions about the true identity and motives of the perpetrator. The investigation peels back layers of Hayden's own moral complexity. Though he operates as a vigilante who kills those he deems deserving of death, he's genuinely disturbed by the possibility that he murdered an innocent man. This internal struggle reveals a strict code of ethics within his vigilantism that, while twisted, provides a moral framework for his actions. His dedication to finding the truth, even when it might implicate him in a wrongful death, shows a commitment to justice that transcends his personal agenda. As the first book draws to a close, the murder mystery remains tantalizingly unresolved. Hayden races against time to protect Callista from whoever drugged her, someone who appears to have orchestrated a complex scheme spanning years and claiming multiple victims. The stakes escalate as evidence suggests the killer has intimate knowledge of both families' histories and may be plotting their next move. This unresolved thread creates mounting tension that carries into the sequel, Now You're Mine, leaving readers with pressing questions about the true identity and motives of the perpetrator. Throughout the novel, communication serves as both weapon and bridge between Hayden and Callista, creating a complex dance of dominance and submission that unfolds through their various interactions. Their exchanges are filled with calculated power plays, from Hayden's demanding texts that require immediate response, often accompanied by specific timeframes or consequences, to Callista's deliberate acts of defiance, such as when she replies with a noncommittal "yup" to his detailed instructions, knowing it will provoke him. Names carry particular significance in their relationship, functioning as markers of intimacy and ownership. Hayden calls Callista Callie, a nickname he claims no one else will ever use, marking her as his territory through language. When she questions this possessiveness, he simply states, "I take what I want, Callie, and I want you." The way he wields her nickname becomes a subtle form of control, using it strategically in moments of tenderness and dominance alike. Their text messages trace a revealing arc, evolving from professional exchanges about her father's case to increasingly explicit sexual banter. Initial messages about legal strategy and meeting times give way to loaded double entendres and outright provocations that leave Callista flushed and conflicted between having a heart attack or an orgasm. This progression mirrors their physical relationship, moving from resistance to reluctant surrender, with each message pushing boundaries further. The phrases that recur throughout their interactions form a possessive litany that shapes their dynamic. "You belong to me" appears in moments of passion and conflict alike. "I'm keeping you now that I've caught you" emerges as both threat and promise. "You can run, but I'll always chase you" becomes a refrain that Hayden uses to both excite and intimidate. These declarations serve as verbal anchors in their relationship, encapsulating the dark romance at its heart while revealing Hayden's deep-seated need for control. Even in moments of tenderness, possession remains the underlying theme, though it takes on different shades. After their first sexual encounter, Hayden tells Callista, "I take care of what belongs to me, especially you." This statement reveals how inextricably care and control have become entwined in his mind. He cannot separate protecting her from possessing her. Their pillow talk often returns to themes of ownership, with terms of endearment seamlessly blending with assertions of control. "My sweet girl, my beautiful possession, mine to protect." The power dynamic extends beyond just words to include their entire communication pattern. Hayden expects immediate responses to his messages, while allowing himself to maintain silence when it suits him. He uses this asymmetry deliberately, creating anxiety and anticipation that further cement his control. Yet occasionally, Calista finds ways to turn this dynamic on its head, using her own silence or carefully chosen words to assert independence, showing how language becomes their primary battlefield for control.
Once your mind refuses to provide easy moral judgments about its characters or their relationship, instead delving deep into the uncomfortable gray areas of human desire and the magnetic pull of darkness, Calista's internal struggle becomes evident when she realizes Hayden's displays of violence don't frighten her, they seduce her. This revelation forces readers to confront their own reactions to the blurred lines between protection and possession, between passion and obsession. The novel expertly weaves psychological complexity into both characters' awareness of their dysfunctional dynamic. Hayden's confession, "It's never been this way for me," comes during a particularly intense moment where he reveals the depth of his obsession, admitting he's contemplated kidnapping Calista just to keep her close. His words carry weight because they acknowledge the aberrant nature of his feelings while simultaneously justifying them through their intensity. Meanwhile, Calista's response, clutching his shirt even as she acknowledges the toxicity of their connection, perfectly encapsulates the push-pull dynamic that defines their relationship. The author creates layers of moral complexity through carefully crafted scenes that force readers to question their own ethical boundaries. When Hayden tracks Calista's movements through her phone, the violation of privacy is clear, yet his genuine fear for her safety adds nuance to his actions. Similarly, when he breaks into her apartment to leave her favorite flowers, the gesture sits uncomfortably between romantic devotion and criminal stalking. The novel challenges readers to examine their own responses to this toxic relationship on multiple levels. Are we horrified by Hayden's stalking and possessiveness, or secretly thrilled by the intensity of his devotion? Do we judge Calista for surrendering to a man who violated her privacy and autonomy, or understand the complex trauma bonds that draw her to him? The story forces us to confront our own dark fascinations and the thin line between romance and obsession. Throughout the narrative, we see how past trauma shapes both characters' actions. Hayden's controlling behavior stems from a childhood marked by loss and powerlessness, while Calista's attraction to danger reflects her own history of emotional neglect. These psychological underpinnings add depth to their choices without excusing them. By the end of the first book, we're left with the uncomfortable truth that love and obsession can coexist, that protection can become possession, and that desire doesn't always follow moral boundaries. The pivotal scene where Calista confronts Hayden about finding her pearls in his possession becomes a perfect crystallization of this theme. Her simultaneous love and hatred for him mirrors the reader's own conflicted response to their relationship, while raising questions about the nature of consent, power, and the price we're willing to pay for passionate connection. The novel concludes with Calista's devastating discovery that Hayden himself is her stalker. Finding pearls from her necklace in his jacket pocket shatters the fragile trust she's developed for him. "My blood runs cold as realization hits," she narrates. "Hayden himself has been terrorizing me." This revelation forces a confrontation where Hayden must admit his obsessive behavior, breaking into her apartment, watching her sleep, taking her necklace to stop myself from taking your body. His confession that his obsession has only gotten worse since they've been intimate confirms Calista's worst fears while simultaneously deepening their connection. Despite her anger and sense of betrayal, Calista finds herself unable to completely reject him. When he insists on caring for her basic needs, physically lifting her onto the kitchen island when she refuses to sit for dinner, she experiences the same conflicted response that has characterized their entire relationship, resistance mingled with surrender. The final scenes show Calista locked in the guest room, crying over her broken trust and bleak future, wondering if she can ever move past Hayden's lies. Yet even in this moment of separation, she acknowledges his inescapable presence. "Even in my dreams, he follows me, turning them into nightmares." This unresolved ending perfectly captures the central question of the novel. Is there any healthy path forward for a relationship built on such a toxic foundation? Can trust be rebuilt after such fundamental betrayal? Or is Callista trapped in a cycle of attraction and resistance that will ultimately consume her? As the first book in a duet, Once You're Mine leaves readers with these questions hanging in the air, an invitation to continue the journey in Now You're Mine and discover whether obsession can ever transform into something resembling love.